Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Bill Oram of The Athletic. He has done really good stuff this year. He is always one of my favorite, if not my favorite beat writer on the Lakers beat. He has joined previously, and the last time he joined, he gave me great advice on New Orleans. So, first and foremost, thanks for that. The brass band that you introduced me to won huge points with me with the wife, so I hugely appreciate that.
I'm glad it worked out. New Orleans is one of the best stops on the NBA schedule, and so lucky enough to get to go a couple times a year, and I was able to share some of the things I've accidentally discovered over the years.
It was fantastic. It was a lot of fun as a trip. Less fun has been this season.
Fantastic segue.
You wrote an article about Luke Walton, and in it, everybody aggregated the tidbit about he and his coaching staff wanting to bring back Julius Randle and wanting to bring back Brooke Lopez, and instead was given JaVale McGee and Lance Stephenson and Michael Beasley, and that was what everybody kind of held on to and grasped onto for decent reason, right? Trade rumors, free agency rumors, that usually drives the narrative. But for me, what I find interesting here is that this is the Lakers treating a former champion, somebody who won titles for the Lakers, or a title for the Lakers, and treating him in almost... It's been kind of gross to watch from afar, and I've been surprised that they've been doing that to one of their own. Is it just a matter of Magic is one of their greater own, and he's allowed to just do this kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that's actually probably a pretty good way of summing it up. I mean, Magic is arguably the greatest Laker of all time, and so he's going to win out in the head-to-head battle of former Lakers. I mean, what to me has been interesting watching this play out over the last 3 years, and the night we found out that Luke Walton was going to be hired, I booked a plane ticket, and the next morning was in Oakland talking to him about getting the job. So I mean, I've really kind of watched this from close up from kind of the beginning, and if you go back to when he was hired, there was such an attitude that the Lakers were going to build everything around Luke Walton, and people within the organization would say, we could see him being our Greg Popovich. And, there was an understanding that, and that's obviously a lot for a guy who hadn't really accomplished a whole lot as a coach yet and had the nice run as the interim, but they really thought that he could be kind of that just center of gravity for the organization. And there was an understanding that Jim and Mitch were going to get fired or were going to, be replaced at some point, one way or another. There was a lot of thought that Luke Walton was going to get some personnel power, like early on. There was just a real sense that he was the guy that they were going to build everything around. And then Magic comes in, hires Rob Pelinka. Luke obviously doesn't have any more power than he did previously. And what's really transpired is that he has basically gotten treated like any other coach, where he just becomes super replaceable. And I think the thing that's interesting is that the Lakers always acted like he was not going to be subject to the same whims of a season, like a single season gone awry, like other coaches might be, that they were going to give him a lot more room to grow and flourish. And I just think, what's really happened has been the opposite of that. I mean, really since, certainly since the start of last year, but really kind of all along, I think that, Magic Johnson has undermined is maybe too strong, but has certainly not given his coach the support that would have allowed him to survive a season like this. Because, there are a lot of really good reasons why the Lakers are where they are right now. The injuries are very, very real. I mean, we talk about LeBron and Rondo, and Lonzo, but Kyle Kuzma missed a lot of time. Brandon Ingram missed a couple of weeks. JaVale McGee, was playing the best basketball of his career before he got pneumonia. And that stuff all just aligned, kind of at this perfect time and created this perfect storm that completely derailed the season. And, I think if the Lakers had given Luke a certain amount of support over the last couple of years, and if they had made it clear to LeBron James that they would not be replacing the coach, you know, I don't necessarily know that he'd be getting fired, but I think now, you know, here we are 11, 12 games left in the season and it's a near certainty and he probably should go. I mean, he probably it'd be more of a mercy kill at this point, frankly, because I don't see how you could bring him back given the way the environment has played out.
Yeah. I wanted to ask if you thought that he was ever, fair is such a naive word, you know, but
yeah.
Was he ever equipped? Was he ever given an actual legitimate chance to come back when you take into account, I mean, 10 games into the year,
he was
berated.
Seven.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and listen, I want to make to your point, sorry to cut you off, but like to your point, like, yeah, fair is like kind of a, no, I don't think it's been fair, but yeah. like my friend Jay Moore, you know, like, from Jerry Maguire, it's show business, not show friends. Right.
Yeah.
So, I do recognize that. But I also think that you're exactly right when it's not just this year. If you go back to last season when the LeVar Ball thing happened and LeVar's out there spouting off about Luke and the coaching staff, the organization says nothing. To me, that was a very, very real problem. You know, Magic Johnson was in Hawaii, like avoiding like fake missiles and was not in, position to come out and like show some support for Luke. I think that was a bad look, and I think that created sort of a sense that he was potentially replaceable. Jeannie eventually calmed that storm by sending the tweet that she sent, but I think that took too long. And so I think ever since then, there's kind of been a sense that maybe Luke didn't have the support of the organization that he thought he would have when he signed on. And then this season, absolutely, you're right. Because even after Magic berated Luke and Magic came out and said that Luke would not be fired before the end of the season, everyone still thought this was a playoff team. I know the Lakers were like 3-5 at the time, maybe, but everyone still thought they're going to be at least a playoff team. The question was whether or not like they could be a top half playoff team or win multiple series. Like that was really more where the mindset was. But I think there was still a pretty strong assumption that because of the way Magic had handled that, that Luke would probably still be fired. And so he's coached the last 75 games of this season, basically with an expectation that he was, not going to be back next year. So I don't think that's fair.
Last question before we go to break. Do you think there's anything he could have done, realistically speaking, to keep his job?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I know there are definitely things that he could be better at in his job, but I think that this is a case where there are just too many people in positions of power who want to have say in who the coach is. I mean, Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka inherited Luke. LeBron and his team of people inherited Luke, and those are some pretty powerful figures. Now there are definitely people in the organization who, up until a week ago, when I was kind of banging on doors about this, were still very much advocates for Luke and did not want to see him get fired. And we're talking about powerful people in the organization,
but
not as powerful as Magic, and certainly not with as much power over that exact situation as Magic. And then obviously, I do think that there is the LeBron factor. So no, I think he was probably doomed.
Yeah. It's been tough to watch because, that's why I used the caveat in that question of realistically speaking, like, sure, the Lakers could have made a title run. And at that point, it's kind of hard to see them letting go of Luke, but that was never really in the cards because of the roster that Luke was given. So I want to take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about, we talked about the organizational support and we've alluded to injuries here, but the roster itself, it just never really made much sense. And I think it allows us to springboard into a larger conversation about, does firing Luke actually address some, I think, larger concerns facing the organization. So we'll get to that here in a second. Today's show is brought to you by DraftKings. Did you know you can fill out a tourney bracket on DraftKings this year? That's right. DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, has a totally free bracket with tens of thousands of dollars up for grabs. Everyone fills out a bracket during the tourney. Might as well do one on an award-winning app with tons of free prizes. For the first time ever, DraftKings is offering a bracket battle promotion with $64,000 in prizes. Personally, I want UNC to go all the way. they're my college team that I inherited because I went to Cal State Fullerton. We were never really good. And once again, Fullerton isn't in the tournament. But give me UNC. Give me, I guess Duke can be in there. Give me Villanova. It doesn't matter what your Final Four teams are. Write them and do it on DraftKings. You know how brackets work. Before tip-off of the first game of the tournament, just pick the winner of every game every round. That's all there is to it. And the best part is you can play for free with promo code Dribble. That's D-R-I-B-B-L-E. You can even set up a private group for you and your friends and compete for bragging rights. So download the DraftKings app or head to DraftKings.com now. Use code Dribble to enter the bracket battle promotion for free and compete for your share of $64,000. That's code Dribble to enter the bracket battle for free, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. So the question I always have for people who want to write off, and I'm not saying that this is what you're doing, by the way, but when I get people respond to me with, you know, this the season would have been fine if they just don't go through injuries, my response is always, one, you can't expect 82 games from everybody on the roster, and two, if you actually feel that way, would you be okay with just running back this exact roster next year? And nobody would be, right? Like, nobody within their right mind would be, except for maybe Magic and Pelinka, because I don't think they aren't accustomed to accepting accountability for any mistakes that they've made. And the examples that I would use, I mean, we already had Jeannie stand up and give the fake news thing when she was presented with the, you know, the nasty media up to their typical tricks. Rob Pelinka said that Reggie Bullock was acquired not because they made a mistake in not having enough shooting to start the year, but because the injuries that they had at the time made it so that they needed more shooters, and the injury that they had at the time was Lonzo Ball, and he's not really a shooter. And then lastly, Magic's comments after the trade deadline, kind of firing back at the beat and all of us in the nasty media that we were babying the players. And I, you know, they were given three opportunities to show some accountability for mistakes that they'd made this year and passed up on that opportunity. And I don't think that bodes well for an organization that really needs to stare in the mirror for a long period of time.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how Magic and Rob respond to some of these questions at exit interviews in a few weeks. Because, you know, at the trade deadline, I mean, there was still, I agree that it was a little bit of deflecting, but there was still a chance that the Lakers were going to make a run and make the playoffs. I think at the trade deadline, you and I probably would have agreed that the Lakers, you know, were more than likely going to find a way in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we haven't heard from them on those subjects since it became clear that this is a completely lost season. And I would think that it would be in their best interest to maybe take a little bit more accountability for the roster construction, which we've known since the beginning of the year was going to be really, really tough to win with. You know, the Lakers got to 20-14, I think, before when LeBron got hurt, and then would have probably been able to, you know, rack up some more wins in January if he hadn't gotten injured. But I do think it comes back to roster construction and this idea that, you know, either Magic and Rob had a bad plan, which was to surround LeBron with a bunch of ball dominant players and you know, get the ball out of his hands, which has never worked in his career, or nobody's even dared to try. Doesn't make sense. Or they couldn't build the team they wanted to build, and so they took what they could and then spun it. And listen, that happens all the time too. So but neither of those is very good, because it's either you didn't know what you were doing, or you did know what you were doing but couldn't do it. So and then to your point about running things back, I think, you know, if this team had just, you know, had some injuries and been able to, and that's why things went off the rails, you could probably bring it back like more or less pretty similar. Like, different guys on the different veteran guys around the young core. But I think that the schism on the roster now between LeBron and the young guys brought on by the Anthony Davis situation has been the single biggest factor in why the Lakers are in this position, and why I think anybody would say you probably do need to make some pretty tough choices and, you know, start trading guys and build a roster that is more aligned in terms of timeline and, experience with LeBron, because to go into next season with LeBron and, you know, all these, and all, not, I'm not saying you can't bring back some of the young guys, you can't choose your favorites and keep them, but to bring back, you know, four or five guys who are, and potentially adding a lottery pick to that, I think is a really, really tough sell to LeBron and to those other players.
Yeah, the thing to me is the Lakers right now used what might, heading into this contract, what most would have thought was going to be the best LeBron year, right? And he was the youngest that he's going to be, and just based off of math alone. Now, I think next year has a chance to be a little bit better because, you know, maybe he doesn't miss 20 games. But I do think that when you have LeBron for a short amount of time, you have to make some of these tough calls. And I think it's kind of reflective on Luke. It's reflective on Lonzo and Ingram. Kuzma and like guys like Kuzma and Josh Hart, I think, are role players anyway. So they're a little bit more replaceable. But with these with guys who have high ceilings, but also large questions looming over them, can Lonzo stay healthy? What's Ingram going to look like when he returns from this blood clot issue? Is he going to look like he looked in the first half of the year or the second half of the year? You don't have time to figure those things out necessarily in the same way that you might if you had a younger LeBron James. And, you know, for if I was LeBron, I can't really hold it against him for wanting them to speed up this process a little bit and find pieces that make a little bit more sense here too, because he has legacy stuff here at play. Do you think the way this all plays out might reflect poorly on LeBron's legacy? Do you think this might, if let's say he goes through two more seasons like he had this year, where either the Lakers are barely making it into the playoffs, but don't really figure into the title if they make it at all, does that reflect poorly on him legacy wise?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head where it just is going to matter. It's going to depend what happens over the next couple of years. I mean, if the years look somewhat similar to this season, then yeah, I think that his Lakers tenure will be viewed, will definitely be a piece of his legacy. Whereas, but if they make the playoffs and, you know, they're playing at a reasonably high level, but not breaking through and getting to the finals, because there's, you know, great teams in the West, like the Warriors.
Exist.
I don't necessarily know that this one year is going to really damage his legacy that much. But if the Lakers, you know, his Lakers tenure, 4 years, 3 years, whatever it ends up being, or longer, is an all out failure, then yeah, I mean that's a big chunk of his career. Let's say he plays 20 years. I mean, that's, you know, four years of 20 years is, you know, it's 20% of his career.
Well, and when you consider the fact that, you know, this stint in the Western Conference coincides with the toughest years of his career, like that's just going to speak louder to the detractors who would say, well, yeah, he played in the Eastern Conference for the bulk of his career. I want to take another quick second here, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about where the Lakers go from here, because I think it's fair to ask whether firing Luke actually addresses some larger concerns that the Lakers have as an organization. So we'll get to that here in a second. So we touched on it a little bit in the last segment about, you know, we have people here, Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, even Jeannie Buss, who are not accustomed to facing very much blame, right? Jeannie always had Jim to draw the ire of the fan base if times got tough. Magic Johnson, he had that one offseason where he was nicknamed Tragic Johnson after a tough finals series against the Boston Celtics. And then Rob Pelinka, like, he's an agent. Nobody's ever really gotten all that angry at an agent before. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that as this season has looked further and further away from anything resembling a success whatsoever, that we're starting to get some of these I guess blows through the media, either at coaching from management, at management from management from coaching, and so on and so forth. And my question is, do we think this goes to an upper, an even higher level, where we get some clapbacks, you know, between Jeannie and the front office, within the front office even itself?
Yeah, listen, I've really been tough on really all levels of the organization. I think, you know, where I think that Jeannie Buss definitely deserves
it. If you're honest, you have to.
Yeah, because listen, like, to me, hiring Magic was a risk. And at this exact moment, I don't think you can say it's a risk that has paid off. No. Because I know that I know that LeBron James is here, and I will give Magic Johnson credit for LeBron James being here. But I also don't believe that Magic Johnson is the only person who could have gotten LeBron James here. So I think if you had done what, going back to 2015-16, I said, yeah, you got to fire Jim and Mitch. You've got to reboot the thing. You got to, like, it's kind of the same thing Kobe said. Free agents aren't going to look at this and say that is a situation I want to be in. There was just too much bad. There was just too much baggage there. Mm-hmm. I assumed that she would then go and try to hire the best people in the business, because she always talks about how her thing is that the Lakers have, you know, the biggest brand in the world. So therefore she wanted to make sure that everybody had the tools they needed to succeed and that they had the best everything. Well, I assumed that she would try to have the best president of basketball operations and general manager, which is not to say that somebody who hasn't had the job before couldn't become that, but this was a thing that needed some immediacy. So I thought, okay, you're going to go try to hire Sam Presti or Daryl Morey or RC Buford. And you're going to like go say, what is it going to take?
Yeah.
And then if they say, we aren't coming, then you say, okay, fine, who will you hire? And you have a process, and then you go find the best person. And instead she got Magic Johnson, which was, you know, a familiar choice for her and like somebody that she really, really trusted. And okay, well, if you think you need Magic Johnson in that role, if you think that's really important and the organization kind of needs that, to improve curb appeal. Okay, I can sort of see that. Well, who's his GM going to be? You'd think that you'd go through that same process and at least get a really experienced GM. And again, we've seen agents make the move and become really good at it. I mean, Bob Myers is, you know, maybe the best in the business all of a sudden. And it's like, you know, he didn't have any more experience than Rob Pelinka did when he got the job. So I understand the logic. But
he also had Jerry West learning from Jerry West while he was doing it.
Yeah, I just don't know that like it was a situation where like you didn't have probably needed to have somebody there who was new and could like kind of help shape the vision, who had done the job before. So that's something that I was skeptical of at the time, and I think at this moment, you know, it has seemed like, you know, has maybe, you know, the chickens have come home to roost on that a little bit. So Magic gets LeBron. But there's a pretty common sentiment around the NBA that LeBron was coming anyway. And you can't tell me that if the Lakers had gone and signed, like, you know, some experienced and respected general manager, that LeBron would not have would have said, oh, I'm not going to sign with the Lakers because they don't have Magic Johnson in that Magic chair. I just don't believe that. Once you assume that you probably could have gotten LeBron in the summer of 2018, either way, then it becomes, well, what else has he done? And right now I'm looking at the Lakers, a Lakers team that's 31-39, missing the playoffs, on the cusp of firing the owner's, pet project as coach, mm-hmm. and you may have to break up this young core because the superstar you brought in has demoralized them. I mean, I would say that things have not gone very well. And so that's why blame starts at the very, very top, I think. And to just kind of the question that you've teased with a couple of times, does firing Luke Walton solve that? I sure don't see how. And that's, again, I'm not saying that Luke shouldn't be fired at this point. I just don't see how that fixes your problems.
Yeah, it's changing the tires on an engine, on a car that doesn't have an engine right now. Right?
Sure.
It's not, you know, well, we got brand new hubcaps. Well, that's not the point here. I do think with, as it pertains to the Magic, so I've also gotten that same kind of blowback that the Lakers don't have LeBron without Magic. And I say, all right, fine. But do they not have LeBron without Pelinka? And that's the question. And you kind of touched on it a little bit too. In the process that went into hiring those guys, Magic was basically hired as soon as Jim Buss was fired. You could even make the argument.
It happened in one press release, and Magic had been in the building as an advisor for like 3 weeks before it happened. Yeah, I was just
going to say, he was hired before Jim Buss was fired. If we're being completely honest, and then Rob Pelinka was was brought on with very little candidate search also. And you know, for somebody like Jeannie Buss, who has been associated with the Lakers for all of her life and obviously has experience in that regard, she's kind of sort of brand new to this role too, where it used to be Jim Buss and it used to be Mitch Kupchak, and now she's kind of thrown into the deep end here. And for her, it was an opportunity to learn how the NBA works in going through a candidate search, and she passed up on that for familiarity, for proximity, and as a result, I agree, it does start at the top, but she's not somebody who I don't think she's never had to be accountable for those kinds of actions before, and I'm wondering, because this is all for naught, all of what you and I and everybody else believes that what the Lakers should do next, what coach they should hire if they do fire. I don't think Pelinka is going to get fired, but if he does get let go, what GM they bring in to replace him, like, that doesn't matter if the people who are at the very top of the organization are unwilling or unable to accept blame for some of the mistakes that they have very obviously made.
Yeah. I think that's just a really interesting point, because they might fire Luke, right? But like, that doesn't, who are they going to hire? Right. Like, they might go hire somebody who is, you know, Magic Johnson's, you know, friend, or somebody Jeannie Buss has a relationship with, or another former Lakers player who doesn't necessarily come with the credentials or pedigree that make you say, okay, like, this is a demonstrably better direction for the organization. Like, I think that the way decisions have been made in recent years make you somewhat skeptical of how they would restructure, even if they did have the awareness to restructure.
It was funny to hear the complaint levied against Luke and his coaching staff that he didn't bring in somebody with more coaching experience, right? I don't know if you saw that from Mark Stein just recently, that the front office or Lakers management was dismayed, I think was the word Mark used, that he didn't hire a more veteran NBA head coach to help show him the ropes. And everybody immediately jumped to, well, there's Brian Shaw, which kind of felt like a shot against Brian Shaw. But also, it's funny that they have that criticism of him when that same criticism can be levied against the way that they have operated to this point. They didn't bring any on-hand experience. They had Jerry West, who was openly positioning himself that he wanted to come in and at least consult with the Lakers, but they passed up on that opportunity. And it, you know, while it can be hypocritical and valid at the same time, but how did you take that when you saw that report?
Yeah, that's definitely been a criticism of Luke's staff, that it's not a very veteran staff. It's a lot of, again, with this familiarity thing, it's a lot of guys that Luke has Arizona ties with. I thought for a while that there was a chance that the Lakers would have Luke just revamp his staff and maybe bring in a little bit more experience. Because, I mean, really, with the exception of, I think, you know, Brian Keefe has, you know, kind of been the architect of the Lakers defense, and you know, and I know the Lakers are sliding defensively and it's been bad over the last couple of months, but really, you know, I mean, I think for the most part, you can say that before the season went off the rails, the Lakers took a big step defensively this season. And that includes, you know, compensating for LeBron's deficiencies defensively these days. Last year, huge step defensively after Brian Keefe took over. Anyway, like, with the exception of Brian Keefe, I don't know that you can really point to another assistant coach who's really made a huge impact on this team. Jesse Mirmus got some credit for the game plan on Christmas night and things like that. But I think you know, revamping the staff would have maybe given Luke the shelter at least for another year to you know, kind of get things back on track and at least fulfill his contract, which you know, fourth year is next year. But at this point, I just think that moment has passed.
Yeah, I agree. It was kind of what's unfortunate here is that you have some actual NBA head coaches who would be coming available. I think Alvin Gentry, his spot with the Pelicans is kind of tenuous at this point. You have
Alvin Gentry's made the playoffs like twice in 16 years as a head coach.
Well, I'm saying,
I mean, the options aren't necessarily great. And you know, I think Alvin's a really good coach.
I meant as like an assistant to especially with offense, because that's kind of what he's best at is the offense.
I see what you're saying. Sorry.
But yeah, the other half to the question is to does firing Luke actually fix anything? Well, it depends largely on who they bring in, right? Because you know the candidates that we've heard so far have been Mark Jackson, Jason Kidd, and Tyronn Lue. And then there was some Tom Izzo noise over the weekend, but that's like an annual tradition dating back to when he was hired at Michigan State. If those are the only candidates there, and then Peter Vesey threw out that Doc Rivers might be interested in the Lakers, but I don't really see that at this point. If those are the candidates that are getting are replacing Luke Walton, with very little candidate search, by the way, with if they go through the same process that Magic was hired under and Rob Pelinka was hired under, then again, not only is it poor process, but the results themselves don't necessarily lend a ton for fans to be confident that they're going in the right direction.
Yeah, you know what's funny is like I think you would say that Tyronn Lue probably makes the most sense out of that group. I mean, especially given his relationship and success with LeBron, and I totally get that. But we are not that far removed from Magic Johnson saying that they were trying very hard not to be the Cavs all over again with the way they built the roster,
right.
And so then to turn around and then start basically scrambling to be the Cavs again, I think it would be a little ironic. But I agree. I mean, Mark Jackson, does not have a great reputation as a coach, particularly in Oakland. But I think that there are a lot of questions about whether or not he's a good coach. Jason Kidd has had kind of dramatic and awkward exits from his two previous his two stops.
He's the only coach to have ever kept Giannis Antetokounmpo under wraps.
Yeah. The one thing I've said, and it's kind of a joke I've told over the last few weeks, is that it feels like the Lakers have kind of this like every few years identity crisis, where you go back to when they had Byron Scott, and it's like tough-minded, defensive-minded coach who old school, but he couldn't relate to the young players, and so the Lakers wanted to be new age. They wanted to be they wanted to be fast. They wanted to be like the Warriors. So they go and get Luke Walton. Well, now. So they want a defensive-minded, tough coach. Magic wants somebody who's tough again. Maybe they should just go hire Byron Scott. And in 3 years, when that doesn't work, they can hire Luke Walton again. And we can just be stuck in this ping-ponging between Byron Scott and Luke Walton until we all die.
I think that's a great way to sum up the show. Bad stuff happens, and then we're just going to go. Well, all right, man. Well, thank you very much, Bill, for hopping on. You did write that article about LeBron James and whether or not he might be washed. It didn't look good against Mario Hezonja, who noted defensive stalwart Mario Hezonja. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say. I mean, it's like it pains me to say it, but I understand that we're at a point in the season where LeBron might be a little bit less engaged than he would be if the games mattered. But there really do seem like there have been signs this season. I thought Dan Devine at the Ringer did a great job breaking it down too. Just signs that LeBron is diminishing, and that's okay. He's 34 years old, but if that's the case, and the Lakers are not getting the same. Kind of player maybe they thought they were getting, how that affects the way they build going forward. It's just a really interesting time for this organization, which by the way went through something different but similar with an aging Kobe Bryant, who continued to be the largest presence in the room even when he couldn't play.
It's the LeBron thing to me is really interesting, because they're almost, by bringing in LeBron, you kind of pass up on the opportunity to change course while you have LeBron.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting how they handle that. Well, thank you very much, Bill, for hopping on between shoot around and the game tonight. Pretty much sums up the season that neither LeBron or Giannis are going to be playing tonight. So I guess go Brooke Lopez.
If that will get you through 2 hours of this game, then I allow it.
All right, man. We'll stay well for the rest of the season, and I guess it's going to be a fascinating off season. Thanks very much.
Yeah, huge. Thanks, man. Appreciate you.